Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. Cause when I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything all.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the April 13th, 2017 edition of the Signs of Life radio show brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. My name is Roman Karpyshka, and I'm filling in for my good friends Bob and Fran Ginsberg. And I'm super psyched to be here today because I have the distinct honor and privilege of interviewing a young and amazing author who calls himself Cyrus Kirkpatrick. Cyrus is the author of Understanding Life After Death. It's an exploration of what awaits you and me and everyone that we've ever known, and numerous other books about travel, lifestyle, and business. He began his interest in parapsychology at the age of 13, which continued into a lifelong pursuit of this type of knowledge. Other than exploring parallel dimensions, Cyrus also runs a travel blog. He's been featured on BBC Radio and various local affiliates for his explorations in North Korea. He's a graduate of the University of Arizona, and he has a website, cyruskirkpatrick.com, where he's got a lot of his work, and his afterlife-related work can be found on www.afterlifetopics.com, as well as on his Facebook page. Welcome to the show, Cyrus.
Hey there.
Cyrus, I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, can you hear me?
Okay, good, good. Yes, now I can hear you perfectly. Hey, I just want to compliment you on your book. It just kind of touches everything. It dabbles in psychic detectives, mediumships, OBEs, NDEs, ITCs, 10 other acronyms. The philosophy, personal experiences, while, you know, you're logically debunking a lot of the tenets of materialism using very valid and scientific and logical arguments. What got you interested in the afterlife studies?
I mean, I guess that's a tough question to answer because there was a lot of different variables that went on. I suppose one element was that I grew up on a ranch and I was homeschooled and had way too much time when I was a kid. And maybe that got my imagination.
We're going to have to go on break.
Desire to know about.
Okay. Hey, Cyrus.
BBSradio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge, bringing humanity closer to truth.
About that, folks. We had a little bit of a technical glitch there, but I think we've resolved it. So I'm not sure what came through after my first question. I was asking you, Cyrus, about what got you interested in the afterlife studies, and you were can you like repeat what you said?
Okay, sure. Let me know if there's any other issues if you don't hear what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
What I was saying is that some of it could be related to growing up on a ranch and having a lot of free time, and I think another element may very well be just a inner desire to want to understand what is, you know, essentially the most important topic that, you know, affects all of us. So I always feel like there's a lack of information out there for people about what happens when we die. And I think I used to feel a bit challenged about the whole idea that, like, nobody can answer what happens when you die. It's like this off-limits great mystery of life. I think I remember watching, like, a TLC special once when I was a kid, and they were like, death, the ultimate mystery. Nobody will ever know what happens when you die. Mm-hmm. I think that challenged me a little bit also.
That's cool. You know, in a way, this might sound a little bit weird, but what do you think of this concept that not knowing is might be one of the things that keeps us alive? Because, you know, if you knew without a doubt 100% that you have this reset button by killing yourself, wouldn't you think a lot more people would be offing themselves if things didn't go their way?
You know, it's a common debate that's brought up also, like, on my forum. People talk about this a lot. I think I may mention it in my book. I'm not sure if I remember talking about that, but, you know, it's a matter of debate. You know, on one hand, people do have free will, and, you know, mm-hmm. given that people have free will, that, you know, somebody who really wants to do that, they're able to. But on the other hand, I've come to find that knowledge about this topic reduces things like grief and depression, which are common reasons that people may want to kill themselves.
So, yeah, there's arguments on both sides. Absolutely. I agree with that for 100%. Absolutely. You know, your book, I loved it so much, I read it twice. What kind of feedback are you getting from this book, from other people? Must be good.
Of course, you know, it's mostly positive. I've had some very flattering reviews about it. I've also had, you know, a few, I would say, highly negative reviews, if not, like, hate mail. And I think that's because in the book, I go after a few sacred cows. On one hand, I do probably get some negative comments by people who are skeptics, but I think I receive a greater amount of negative comments by people who are kind of like in the New Age movement, because my book goes after like certain ideas in the New Age movement and the New Age kind of ideology. And so I do get people telling me that, hey, you're way off base. I don't know who this guy is, but why, you know, what's he talking about? I get some of that, but it's overwhelmingly positive. But you know, I do have a few comments like those as well.
Well, that's what makes it interesting. You know, if it's all positive, it could be, you know, okay, thank you very much. But, you know, getting some negative stuff challenges you to counter back, I would think.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a good thing, because I don't like existing in an echo chamber. And it's something you see, like, on a lot of forums, especially, like parapsychology-related communities. So sometimes they develop into these echo chambers where everybody has to agree with each other, and that's something I always want to avoid happening, because when that happens, there tends to be an issue where the same ideas just get spun around again and again. Nobody applies critical thought, and at the end of the day, you end up with something that maybe isn't even accurate at all, and that's not good for anybody.
Right. Hey, let's talk about your book a little bit. I find that you have quite the gift of weaving many different concepts together in an interesting way, easy-to-read way. First of all, how long did it take you to write the book?
I think I began kind of a rough draft in 2014, maybe late 2014. In 2015, I went traveling, and I spent like 10 months abroad. And I ended up spending like 3 months in Prague and a month in Sarajevo, Bosnia. And, you know, I went to Sarajevo, and it's a stellar city, really, really cool place, but also gets a little bit boring sometimes. And so I ended up spending most of that month writing and finishing the book. So altogether, like a year, but, you know, that last month I really picked it up and then managed to get it out there like a month or two after that.
Cool. Did your world travels and seeing different cultures influence your direction of afterlife studies or at all contribute to it?
I think it's contributing to it right now. I've discovered some very unusual things, especially like in the Middle East, about ideas and conceptions about the afterlife that fit in with, you know, how the afterlife really is. And I'd like to explore all that in future books. I learned about some very unusual practices in Turkey that relates to physical mediumship, and that it's possible to even take like an anthropological perspective to some of these topics. And that's something I'm going to explore. But for this book in particular, I think, you know, when you travel, it does affect everything in some way. And that's the great thing about traveling, maybe in ways that I'm not aware of. But there's no direct influence, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't wait for your next book, I'll tell you that much. Is there any idea, like, I mean, on topic, of course, I've seen that you've written 10,000 other books of other topics. Well, not actually, I've seen 15 of them on Amazon. But in terms of, like, you know, the afterlife-related type of studies, do you...
Well, a lot of my other books, I mean, I hate to use the adjective goofy, but at this point I will consider them a little bit goofy. Like, I have books about, like, traveling and making money on your computer and stuff like that. But, you know, this is, like, the meaty stuff that's kind of, like, my primary work. And so this, Understanding Life After Death is the one primary book I have. And the next one, I mean, it's... The rough title is still Understanding Spirit Communication, because I've gone on this whole crazy journey above, you know, communicating with deceased people and exploring, you know, how that whole side of things operates. So that's still the rough working title, and I have a good chunk of the book finished, and I don't know, it'll be finished most likely this year, or if not towards the end of the year. But I was saying the same thing last year, and it, you know, it wasn't out, so we'll see.
Okay. Well, I, for one, am very much looking forward to it. I think it's very well written, very easy to understand, and you make it very, very interesting. You know, the way that I found out about you, actually, was through Victor Zammit and his Friday Afterlife Reports, I should say.
You had an interview
there with, I think it was Sandra Champlain, a couple of months ago, and it's like, wow, okay, I'm going to give this book a shot. As a matter of fact, a lot of my reading material that I've obtained was from, you know, recommendations from his afterlife reports. I think he's doing a great job just, helping this whole thing out.
Yeah, I've been subscribed to him, I think, like, I'm going to say, like, the last, like, 14, 15 years.
So, yeah. Oh, wow, that's a lot longer than me. I've been looking at his reports for about... Oh, I would say about 8 years.
Well, that's a long time still.
Yeah, it's still a long time, but, you know, he's very dedicated every Friday. You know, it actually comes in on Thursday because that's already Friday Australia time. And it's like clockwork. He's never missed one.
It's like clockwork.
It is. It's total dedication. It's like, yep, there's the email in my inbox, you know.
You know, with all the advancements in what appears to be electronic communication from the other side, I wonder if, in the future when Victor has passed on, if we'll still be getting those reports. You know, I think it could happen.
You know what? He will find a way to bring it to us from the other side, I am sure.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, Victor claims, I've seen this over and over again, that the strongest evidence for the belief in the afterlife, or to prove that the afterlife exists, is through physical mediumship. He refers a lot to David Thompson, that he goes to a lot of his sessions and all that. And what is your opinion on the physical mediumship? Have you ever experienced it? Have you ever been part of a session or anything like that?
I'm ashamed to say I haven't been in a physical mediumship session. This is one of the reasons that I've been delaying my book a bit, because it's a bit tricky finding a way to get into a physical seance.
Oh, you're fading out, buddy.
Can you hear me? Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Now I can hear you.
Okay, great.
No, I can't hear you anymore.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so you're saying that you haven't actually firsthand experienced physical mediumship, and that's one of the reasons that your book has been delayed?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're going to go to a commercial break. It's about that time, and I think we're going to resolve some more of the technical issues.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself, Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back, everybody. Just right before the break, we were talking about physical mediumship. And Cyrus, you were telling me how it's one of the things you were kind of holding you back from publishing your next book. You wanted to experience one of those sessions for yourself?
Yes, that's right. And it's a little bit tricky sometimes finding one without, say, traveling out to Australia. But there are, you know, definitely people who are practicing in different places in the States. It's just like it's a matter sometimes of budget, getting out there, finding a good time. You know, there's a lot of little hurdles I found. I think in the next coming years, I'm going to devote a lot of time to attempting to getting on board with some of those physical seances.
Right.
At the moment, you know, I haven't found too many, but I'm working on it.
Okay. It's a good reason to get out to Australia, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a good excuse. And
good excuse.
If you'd like, I can talk a little bit about physical seances in case some of the listeners may not know what that is, because it's interesting what a niche that is. You know, it's as you were saying earlier, Victor Zambit, who is one of the most afterlife researchers, he considers physical mediumship to be like perhaps the primary area of evidence for the afterlife. Which is funny because most people, when they think of the primary evidences of the afterlife, they may think of like near-death experiences or things of that nature, which are very mainstream. And yet, you know, many of the researchers feel it's physical mediumship. In essence, physical mediumship is when you go into a seance and the medium is basically a conduit for the other side. So this means that as a conduit, they're able to, in a sense, conjure, create phenomena inside the seance room that interacts with the people there. As an example, during the Skoll experiments, there were balls of energy, balls of light. They would dance around the room and interact with people. There is, with the David Thompson seances, allegedly full materializations of people who have been deceased, who appear inside the seance room.
Yep.
And that's a pretty profound statement. But as an example, there was the afterlife researcher, Montague Keen, and he passed away in 2004, I believe.
Right.
And shortly after he passed away, you know, he was one of the investigators of David Thompson. And so he, you know, came through in a David Thompson seance, was able to communicate with his wife and also relay a lot of information about the afterlife. He did this after materializing into the room. So he appears and he can, you know, shake people's hands, talk to people, and he's really there. Now, the one caveat is that most physical seances happen in the darkness. So a lot of skeptics use that as a way to dismiss the topic because they say, right, well, if it's happening in the darkness, then who knows what kind of shenanigans might be happening. But right, the people who are serious researchers know that the darkness doesn't necessarily mean that there's fraud, because there's a lot of crazy stuff which cannot be explained by any other means except to say something paranormal is happening.
Right.
And that supposedly, if you're in the darkness, it keeps a safe seance, and if you turn on lights, it interferes with not only the energy but the ectoplasm, and it can actually be dangerous to the mediums.
Just
so
like Helen
that's
Duncan,
kind of what they say.
Yeah, like what's her name? Helen Duncan, I think, was killed by that, right? Some investigators flicked over.
Oh yeah, that's the famous story. Is that Helen Duncan? The police raided her home in the middle of a seance, mm-hmm, and flipped the lights on, and then all the ectoplasm shot back into her body and killed her.
Right.
Now,
right.
Helen Duncan is also one of, you know, still today considered like this model of a fake medium, because there's these famous images of like this puppet, and they say, well, this is what she used. However, you know, when you research that a little bit deeper, it turns out that this puppet was made as part of a demonstration. The photos were taken out of context. So it's a bit sad, the whole situation with Helen Duncan. In fact, even I used to be a skeptic of Helen Duncan until I went a little bit deeper and discovered that, you know, it's not always what it looks like on the surface.
You know, I got to admit to you something. You're talking about this type of physical mediumship. I mean, what's his name? Leslie Flint, who you spent a lot of time talking about in the book. At first, when I discovered Leslie Flint tapes many, many years ago, and I was listening to them. Now, I must have picked a bad batch or something, because to me, a lot of the voices did sound the same. And I'm a musician. I have a trained ear, and it sounded the same. But in your book, you go on to explain. You provide a very good explanation of, you know, they're going through this ectoplasmic voice box, so there are going to be some similarities. But then you introduced us to, who's that aviator, and you put a link in it, and boy, did it sound like a woman. I mean, it did not sound like Leslie Flint at all. It kind of opened my eyes a little bit. That was really amazing.
Yeah, as well with the Annie Nanji tapes. That was the wife of the doctor, Dina Nanji.
Right.
And mm-hmm, she communicated for 10 years. She sounds like, you know, like kind of like a French-Swedish woman. Like there's no mistaking her for, you know, any of the male voices.
Right.
Unless you want to go into like crazy conspiracy territory, be like, well, maybe Leslie Flint had a secret accomplice. It was a woman. It's like, okay, whatever. But,
right,
you know, then that's kind of stretching it a bit. With Leslie Flint, I used to be a skeptic as well because of the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I dug a little bit deeper. You know, Leslie Flint wasn't a typical physical medium. I'll actually find that some of the other physical mediums, like David Thompson, I think that there's more variety with the male voices. And with Leslie Flint, it was all basically coming through this one device. So it's not like they're not materializing into the room. What happens is that like this little mucusy looking thing appears in the room, and it's made out of ectoplasm, and
right,
usually sits on Leslie Flint's shoulders. You know, it's pretty weird to describe, because you get like this ball of mucus that materializes into the room, and somehow this ball of mucus has some like technology inside of it that's allowing people on the other side to talk through it. But all the voices become altered or, you know, sound similar as a result. So, but the proof isn't in the sound of voices. The proof is in the fact that, like, a bizarre ectoplasmic voice box is appearing, and the voices are coming
right
in sometimes,
not
you know,
true,
simultaneously to Leslie Flint talking. You know, you can hear Flint talking, you can hear
yeah
the voices talking. So,
not to mention the very personal messages that come through. That, I mean, he'd have to have a whole slew of detectives working for him and picking through people's garbages and that kind of thing to find out this information.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it would be easier to be skeptical of Flint if it were only the celebrity voices, because he had a lot of people like, you know, Rudolph Valentino and a lot of
right
famous names like that. But when it comes to like the personal things, like the Dina Nanji tapes, it's pretty much impossible to refute unless he had like a whole team of like at least a couple of, you know, PIs working diligently and stalking
right
these people to be able to, you know, come up with the types of details that came up during those sessions. I mean, you have his wife talking about, right, you know, things he did that morning. It's like, I noticed that, you know, you looked at my picture today and thought of me, and then you got the flowers in. Those are really nice. I'm happy you put them on the vase by the, you know, by the cupboard. Things,
right,
of that
the other
nature.
Possibility is that the sitters could have been plants as well that agreed with everything. But I really don't think, I mean, why would he waste his time and energy doing something like that?
Yeah, he would have had to have done it for 10 years, and he wasn't,
right,
exactly making lots of money. I mean, there are, you know, there are celebrity mediums these days that, you know, make thousands of dollars a session. Flint, you know, he,
yep,
made enough money to scrape by, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't like,
right,
a celebrity medium. He wasn't, you know, he was
exactly
after riches.
But he's definitely one of the best, that's for sure. I actually, speaking about rich and famous and celebrity mediums, I was actually on the, you heard of the Long Island Medium Show with Teresa Caputo?
I know about the show. I've seen it on cable.
Yeah, I was actually on it through the Forever Family Foundation. Bob had contacted me, and she was doing a session in her house with some, with bereaved parents. You know, I have a little bit of a tragedy, well, not a huge tragedy, actually, when I lost my son and all that. And anyways, she got it right on. I mean, she told me things that nobody knew about my son. That, I mean, I was even surprised that a lot of the things that she revealed didn't even make it to the show. I made it to the show. I was on the last episode of season 6, and she was quite good. I mean, I've seen a couple of different mediums over the years, and she was definitely good. I've seen some other good ones that aren't famous as well. I don't think fame and good are correlated. I think it's just, you know, you have it or you don't, you know, and if you're...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I had a session with Suzanne Wilson a few months ago, and this was after my mom passed away last summer. But it was just that there were things which were just beyond the scope that, you know, like skeptics say things like cold reading, hot reading. But I had Suzanne identifying specific details of dreams and astral projection experiences I had that not a soul knew about. So,
right.
You know, so I would say that any possibility of fraud was just, you know, completely, you know,
right,
denied at that point.
Absolutely. What got me with Teresa was that she had told me that my son is thanking me for burying him in a Ukrainian shirt. We have these, you know, being Ukrainian, we have, we wear these embroidered shirts at special occasions and things like that. And that's nothing that she would have known. Like, she didn't even know my last name, you know. So.
Oh wow! Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is stuff that can't be explained rationally. And this is one of those things where it's like, you know, the skeptics hold the narrative about this topic. Okay, Wikipedia holds the narrative about this topic.
Yes.
But the thing is that those guys are actually the ones who are completely irrational. So me, I'm a skeptic, I'm a rationalist. So that's why I take this seriously, because there's no other explanation when you really get into it. And if you just take what Wikipedia says, then you're basically going to get disinformation, because according to the skeptics, there's no such thing as mediumship. There's no such thing as a single psychic anything that's ever happened. And that's something that, you know, that we have to combat.
Right, right. I think the veil's getting thinner, though, over time. I think more and more people, especially with the with the Internet and Facebook and people communicating and sharing experiences, I think that veil's going to get thinner. I think it's really going to help.
So they say. They say that that is happening. You hear a lot of people who are channelers and, like, you know, on a more advanced level, always talking about this kind of event that's going to happen, that we're, you know, consciousness is you know, moving forward. I don't know personally much about whether that's true or not, but at least with the Internet, we can say that people have the ability to Google what happens when you die and have perspectives that, you know, are varied, and people can get an idea of what some of the evidence is much more easily than in the old days.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think one of the things that is very evidential, and I think you deal with it the most in your book, and that's something that you've experienced firsthand, and that's the astral projection aspect of our consciousness. Can you go into it? I know there's so much to say. What you call the second Earth, tell us about that and some of the experiences that you've had with that.
Well, it's a chance that ordinary people can experience the afterlife, and that isn't necessarily through some kind of, like, imagination or channeling or anything like that. It's through actually physically, literally going there. And this can happen through astral projection, which is something that is thoroughly investigated, like with the Monroe Institute.
Right.
I'm sure people know about like out-of-body experiences. An out-of-body experience, this is actually kind of what first began happening, is I would find myself coming out of my body in my bedroom and sitting up out of my body and looking around. And given my pre-existing knowledge about the afterlife, that's a very fun thing to have happen to you, because it's like, oh, well, look, I was right all along. Here I am out of my body, and it's really happening. And that's a lot of fun when that happens, I'll tell you that. And so that gradually evolved to going out of my body and then kind of warping into other realities, or rather, I should say, the astral dimension, and being able to have communications with people who live on that spectrum. And that's been one of the best ways for me to understand what the afterlife is like, by actually peering there and asking people about it. And it's what surprises me is how many people have experiences like this. So, like, my rough estimate is at least 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 people have some kind of out-of-body or astral-type experience.
Right.
But a lot of people don't want to talk about it. They write it off, like maybe they had some kind of hallucination, because, you know, it's not a topic that people are necessarily wanting to hear about. You can't really tell your family about it. So it's kind of like this hidden thing that happens to many people.
Absolutely. You're actually talking to somebody who it happened to as well. I've actually experienced it once. I was in bed, and just like you describe in your book, there was an electrical vibration that vibrated through my whole body. And I was right in between the, you know, I was like too tired to sleep kind of thing, so I was right between consciousness and unconsciousness, and I felt my whole body vibrate. And whoop, next thing I know, I'm just floating like an inch or two above my body, you know, and then freaked me out, and boop, right back in, you know, one of those things.
That's a great, in many ways, I mean, what we're talking about here is an undiscovered area of science. So, you know, it's not something that's abstract, or there's actual physical corresponding types of phenomena that happen with it, in this case, the electrical sensation. And so we can propose a lot of theories about what that is, but it hasn't been fully fleshed out yet, like in mainstream science. Like I assume it has to do with changing of the wavelength. It has to do with perhaps some kind of an energetic connection that keeps us tethered to our bodies, and we feel that as we disconnect. But there's just a lot of subjects here which have not yet been fully discovered. And it's basically up to the next generation of scientists and metaphysical researchers to finally bring all this out into the open. But the out-of-body experience is definitely a gateway into it. And, you know, if you can push past the fear and keep practicing that, you can eventually use that as a way to literally visit some of these places that we talk about. And for me personally, it doesn't last as long as I would like it to. You know, maybe it lasts like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. But that little bit of time you can spend on the other side, you know, you can glean so much information from it. And
now, how's the correlation of time on this side and that side? I mean, 20 minutes here, is it equal to 20 minutes there?
In my experience, I don't feel like there's that much of a divergence. Now, I think this changes if you are over there, perhaps in a way you're fully disconnected from your body. I know it changes during, like, near-death experiences. But for me personally, I've come to find that if I take a 20-minute nap and I have an out-of-body experience in an AP episode, it usually lasts about 20 minutes or maybe less. So, I mean, that's just me. People definitely have mixed reports about that.
Right. I've yet to meet anybody yet on those astral planes. I remember reading about you the first time where you met the Indian couple when you were walking down the road, and they probably saw you as some kind of translucent being, so they came right up to you.
Exactly. And that kind of shows you how, you know, the physics operates, because, like, to us, when there's an interaction from that side, they're like phantasms, they're like ghosts, right? And I think to some extent, when we interact on their side, we're kind of like phantasms and ghosts. I think for them, it's a little bit more in your face than it is here. I think you see people walking around, they want to come up and talk to you. But, you know, they're not fully in that dimension. So it's interesting. Right. I think that the old film The Others with Nicole Kidman, I think, is a good movie that illustrates this a little bit. But there is it has to do with the way the physics operates on that side. And there's definitely a lot to be discovered in that area.
So what are your tips and tricks and advice for successful astral projection? I know you yourself say you're not an expert in it by any means. You're not like what's his name?
There's Jürgen Zieber, and then there's William Bollman, and some of those guys who are much more proficient than I am.
Tom Campbell as well. You probably heard of Tom Campbell.
Yeah,
he's got the My Big Toe theory and all that. He's a proficient OBE as well, and he's wonderful as well, by the way.
Oh yeah, these guys are all great. It's kind of interesting though, because I even think when you go out of body, when you have these experiences, you're not always getting the full like afterlife experience. That there's still interference happening with the brain, with the earth brain, and so sometimes you can be having an astral experience and it can potentially fall apart into a dream. And sometimes, right. if I'm like communicating with people who exist on that side, they may even be saying like, "Uh oh, we're losing you." Kind of like being on a radio show when your signal's going out. Like they're like, "Uh oh, we're losing contact." You know, can you try to stay in? It's really interesting the way that works.
Kind of like what we experienced earlier.
Yeah, exactly. It's because it's kind of there is some similarity even in the sense that we're talking about wavelengths. Like instead of radio signals, instead of phone signals, it's like the signal that exists of our actual, you know, our souls, our consciousness,
and it can
operate in ways that, you know, you may find that there's analogies that can be made between how those things operate. As for tips to be able to induce these experiences, you know, this sounds kind of new agey, kind of goofy, but I'm beginning to realize that a big part of it has to do with like your vibration, right? So it has to do with, if you're somebody who tries to meditate, who thinks and is open to these ideas, somebody who is not afraid of trying these types of things out, somebody who has like a thirst to experience it, then your ability to have the experiences is much greater.
Okay.
You know, sometimes if somebody has a lot of fear, a lot of grief, then they're going to having a good out-of-body experience. I think the best way to start doing it is to try to meditate and condition yourself and accept the idea that it may happen, invite it into your life a little bit. And then afterwards, usually the best like stepping off point is to begin lucid dreaming. Now, as I talk about in some places, there is a difference between lucid dreaming and astral projection, namely that the lucid dream is you're entering into like a demiplane that exists within your own mind, whereas astral projection is, you know, being in a shared reality with other people. But lucid dreaming is a little bit easier to do, and you can start doing that by, throughout the day, you want to create a habit of where you're asking yourself, am I dreaming? Now, this isn't some kind of a philosophical question. The idea is to make a habit.
Right. Or looking at your watch constantly, for example.
Habit kicks in, and you say, oh, am I dreaming? And as soon as you, like, activate that like, critical thought part of your mind, then you're able to become aware of a dream as it's happening. And once you become aware of a dream as it's happening, you actually have, like, motor function of your astral body. So you can move your astral body around, and then that's how you can have an out-of-body experience.
Wonderful. Yeah, I heard another tip is like, you know, throughout the day, look at your watch constantly. You know, do that repetitive motion so that when you're in your dream, when you do, you know, look at your watch, it might appear different or something like that, you know.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like the movie Inception now, but, you know, I get a little pendulum. But no, it's like, it's like almost anything that just like snaps you out of the dream haze and activates like a higher level of consciousness, because dreams themselves are kind of like a low level of consciousness, and that's something that has to be, you have to snap out of that to be able to have an astral experience.
Right. And is it possible, I think you mentioned in your book about your brother having some pretty bad OBEs.
Yeah, you know, that probably kept some fear in my own mind about doing it, and he did have negative OBEs. And you know, when you hear people say that, you know, there's no negative experiences, the afterlife is entirely just, you know, peaches and roses, then you should, you know, approach that with a bit of skepticism, because I know that's not the case. There are strange entities, there's negative entities, there's a lot of weird stuff out there. And my brother, you know, when I was growing up, I kind of feel like that the issue was he was practicing all of these, like, you know, astral types of concepts, but he wasn't reinforcing himself with any kind of spiritual barrier, right? So
has to do with the vibration level.
Yeah, it has to do with the vibration level. So he wasn't reinforcing himself with a shield of like positive energy, because that's essentially what you need to have when you're dabbling in this area, is just a higher vibration. I mean, I've a couple times wrestled with negative entities, and I came to find that, you know, they have no power unless you give them consent. And right. I apologize if you hear dogs barking in the background. It's all my roommates, silly dogs running around, but
that's okay.
Makes it more colorful. But anyway,
sure. Well, when Bob and Fran,
as I was saying, so yeah, I'm sorry, what?
When Bob and Fran host the show, I hear their cats meowing all the time.
Oh yeah, well, it happens when you have little squawky dogs all over the place. But anyways, so as I was saying, so you have to have a kind of a spiritual barrier, and I've wrestled a bit with some negative entities during OBEs, and like they can't affect you unless you give them consent. And you can give them consent without even knowing it if you're like in a state of fear,
right.
And if it wants you to like become submissive to it and you allow that to happen, then you could have a negative experience. But
okay.
So long as you know that they have no power, then they can't have any power over you. And
right.
I really don't know what you know. I mean, to me, it's almost like, you know, the astral world is a jungle, and there's as many varied strange personalities as there are human souls on this planet. So, you
Absolutely.
Know, who knows what you may encounter. And there's
right.
also the existence of lots of things which are commonly described as extraterrestrials. I mean, you can go out of body, and many, many people have the experience where they see gray aliens. So, I
right.
mean, that goes to show you something right there. That's basically what my brother was having happen to him, is that he was going out of his body and being tormented by these gray aliens, like literally on a weekly basis. And so he was terrified of going to sleep because of it.
Right.
But like that would never happen to me because, not
you
to brag, but my vibration wouldn't allow it.
Okay, right. It's like I think you said in your book that our minds often bring our subconscious thoughts and nonsense into the astral projections as well.
Yes, that can also happen, and this is where we go into the concept of a non-consensus reality. When your own thoughts, you basically have a little inner universe working within your own mind. So this is not the afterlife. So the afterlife is a parallel dimension. It's a real, physical, tangible place.
Mm-hmm.
The area of our own minds, I mean, that's something you can go deep into. And even when you exist in the afterlife, you can still have dreams. You can still fall asleep. You can still explore this inner realm. But you know, it shouldn't be confused with actually being in the afterlife. And inside the inner realm, it's almost like it's this massive cosmic filing cabinet of your life and your past lives and your subconscious desires and thoughts and fears and all these things, and so much of it being made manifest into what will appear to you like physical objects and creatures
right.
and entities. And, you know, it's disconnected from the objective reality. So, you know, we don't have to worry about that clown that we were afraid of when we were a kid, like, you know, like actually physically hurting us, whether it's in our physical body here or within an astral physical body, because it exists within our own mind. But we can fall into those illusions, and
oh,
those illusions can scare us.
When I was a kid, I was scared of the Michelin Man. Remember the Michelin
Man?
Well,
I don't blame you. I mean, what the heck is the Michelin Man? Is it made out of tires? How did the Michelin Man come to happen? Did some sorcerer like take some tires and turn it to life? I don't know. It's
he
terrifying.
Came out of the closet chasing after me when I was a little kid. I swear to this day that happened to me. So I mean, I'm not scared of the Michelin Man anymore. But boy,
well, I mean, that's the kind of thing is that I'm afraid to say if you go into a, like a non-consensus reality,
mm-hmm.
that fear you had the Michelin Man like years ago, it's
mm-hmm.
still exists somewhere. So
right.
somewhere the Michelin Man is in your nightmares, you know.
Oh,
and you want to be careful not to summon that up, because you
okay.
know that could happen if you go into a non-consensus reality.
Right, absolutely. That's very good advice. What would you say to skeptics that say that, you know, the astral world and all of this stuff is a product of an overactive imagination that's created by the brain and nothing else?
I mean, at this point, it's a laughable statement given the vast amount of experiences in different types of fields.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first thing I'll do is talk about near-death experiences, because that's the most, I suppose, acceptable branch of metaphysics at this point.
Right.
That nobody denies that they exist. There's just
right,
an
especially
argument
now, Sam Parnia came out with that big study saying that the, you know, consciousness goes on after the physical, you know, shutdown of the brain.
Well, yeah, you had the AWARE study. The AWARE study mm-hmm. didn't conclusively necessarily, you know, say that they were a success, and they didn't quite achieve what they wanted
well,
to do.
Well, they proved it for about 2 minutes. Yeah, for about 2 minutes after the brain died, they said consciousness for at least 2 minutes goes on, you know?
But yeah, exactly. Parnia did say that, and he was able to get at least one verified NDE that involved identifying objects that were inside
right.
of the operating theater. And so
right.
he was able to do it in a controlled condition. So that alone basically proves the existence of something happening outside our bodies.
Yeah.
And then you can go into the whole field of, you know, parapsychology, and you can just keep digging and digging and digging, and you'll never stop finding material to, you know,
right.
reinforce
now,
the point
like
that
quantum physics is proving that, you know, that consciousness dictates reality, and you know, I'm a firm. What makes a lot of sense to me is that consciousness is not inside the brain. The brain is kind of like a TV receiver for consciousness,
mm-hmm.
that it's
yeah.
somewhere else. And we haven't got that figured out yet. And just like they haven't figured out where memories or personality or consciousness, where it resides in the brain, because it doesn't. Yeah, there's parts of the brain that if they shut down, it will no longer receive those things, so you will be handicapped by that. But it doesn't mean that it's created in the brain. Just like if you smash your television, it doesn't mean the weather reporter is dead, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, exactly. You know, and the funny thing is that the brain has a very specific purpose, which is to filter consciousness, and it allows us not to be completely overwhelmed by what our consciousness would be like if we didn't have a filter on it. So
right.
sometimes people have a near-death experience, though they take some DMT, and those filters are taken off. And when the filters are taken off, I mean, you can have these extraordinary experiences that, you know,
right.
that you can go into these kind of like non-physical celestial types of realms that people report during NDEs.
Like, yeah,
so
during
anyway,
ayahuasca experiences as well.
Exactly. So you have to have the filter. One of the interesting things I've discovered, at least what I theorize, is that, you know, there's multiple types of afterlife. And the place that most of us go to is this place that's very similar to the world we're in right now. And that includes the existence of bodies. We have actual bodies just like
right.
here. And, you know, there's cities and civilizations and people, and there's hobbies and hotels and restaurants. I mean, it's amazing how similar it is to our world. I mean, there's big differences as well, but it's still a continuation of human civilization. So in this world, when you're in your astral physical body, I believe you have a brain as well.
Right,
because
right.
you still need to have a brain to filter that consciousness, or else you wouldn't be able to experience that level you're on.
Right.
Because you have to have the tuning switch. And
sure.
something that I've been researching lately, and it'll hopefully go in my next book, is that people are able to have an astral projection experience and go into this, like, you know, this very real physical environment. And then while they're there, they can take some ayahuasca, they can take some DMT, and then they can have a profound experience while they're already out of their bodies. And it's kind of weird to wrap your mind around that, because it's a little bit like Inception when you're going layer after layer.
Right.
But one thing you can do, like when you're out of your body, when you're in an astral environment, I mean, for one thing, you can eat stuff. I mean, I've had experiences, like I told you, my mom passed away, and
right.
I've been able to visit her since she passed away, and I've
mm-hmm.
sat with her eating cake, you know, things like that. So I mean, you can eat food, you can digest food, all that good stuff, and you can also take substances which can affect your consciousness. So you can be on that side, and you can pop some DMT, and then you can safely have an experience that way, which is something that you know, I find weird and hard to believe, but some pretty cool people like Jurgen have confirmed that this happens. So I'm
well. And
so
you don't have to travel to Peru to get a hold of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can just go on the astral plane and then be like,
right.
"Hey, does anybody have any DMT? I'm astral projecting right now, and I want to have an experience, and somebody might hook you up."
Isn't that you know? I never even thought of that. That's a really cool concept. Well, as long as they have Harley Davidsons and guitars on the other side, I'll be happy.
Oh, they do, by the way. I've actually heard about people with Harleys. I mean, because people send me their like stories all the time of like their astral projection experiences. And I remember one lady said her husband like had a Harley Davidson. So that's
mm-hmm.
something to keep in mind.
Very cool. Very cool. So here's a twist for you. You write a book about life after death, and then you conclude it by saying, "There is no afterlife." I love it. Explain.
Okay, so I say there is no afterlife because when we talk about the afterlife, what that is, it's a primitive interpretation by a very primitive society known as the humans on this primitive planet called Earth. And we haven't figured out what multidimensional physics is all about. And because we haven't figured that out, we're still in this paradigm of, like, physical life and death. And so we use, through religion, we have had experiences with other dimensions, and we think, oh, it's the exalted afterlife that, you know, it's where the, you know, bad people get punished, the good people go to heaven. And that's basically the paradigm that we exist in. Like, if we were a more advanced civilization, and I'm sure there are, you know, civilizations out there which are, you know, definitely at that level, then we wouldn't think of this whole concept as being, you know, this magical place we go to when we die. We'd say, oh, yeah, it's the other wavelength. It's another dimension. And we basically leave it at that. It's like, it wouldn't even be a big deal. So we're stuck in this whole concept of an afterlife, and it's not, you know, it's completely inaccurate. And it seems like even, like, the more progressive areas of spiritual studies still get it wrong sometimes. Like, sometimes I pick on the New Age movement a little bit, but I think even those guys get it wrong because they're still in this paradigm of thinking it's a place to go to be rewarded after you die, or it's a place to go meet God and meet Jesus. And while some of those elements may be true, like, you could potentially meet Jesus, you could potentially meet your higher self, meet source consciousness, meet God, it's still, that's not what the afterlife is. Really, there is no such thing as an afterlife. What we're talking about is multidimensional physics. And you can, I mean, there's hints of this in our conventional physics. We have the existence of dark matter. Dark matter makes up 95% of the cosmos. Right. To give you an idea of that, it's like, imagine if you pick up, like, a rubber ball, there's the equivalent of, like, 20 other rubber balls that exist on the, you know, on the dark matter spectrum. So what is dark matter? Well, if you ask physicists, it's a parallel dimension that seems to be interacting with our own dimension, actually plays a role in nature in the sense of allowing galaxies to stick together like glue. So it has a very real function. So I think it's pretty easy to draw a parallel that dark matter is...
I think dark matter also affects gravity. It definitely has an effect on gravity as well.
Yeah, it does. So, you know, it's definitely part of nature, but, you know, if you just go by what the physicists say, that if it's a parallel reality, then, okay, well, that matches, you know, exactly with what we're talking about. That's the astral plane. So now you have an idea about how big it is, you know, It's our universe is only 5% of what that place is. So that's an idea of how big of a place we're talking about.
Yeah, it's incredible how big our universe is. I mean, we're one sun in a galaxy that's in the Milky Way. That's one little dot in 300 trillion other Milky Ways. It's incredible that is only like 5% of everything else. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's just so huge. It's mind-boggling, and I think the veil is getting thinner. Over time, I think with more people communicating about this stuff and sharing ideas and encouraging others to share ideas and move forward, people like yourself, I think it's going to go good. I think hopefully in our lifetime, this big question will be 100% resolved.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's very optimistic. I'd like to believe that. I think it's up to us. I think that people have to collectively start waking up. If you go into some of the more esoteric areas of the internet, you'll read a lot of things about how, you know, not only are we waking up, but we have to wake up because there's going to be some kind of energetic shifts that may happen. And when those energetic shifts happen, that if we haven't properly, you know, raised our vibration, it could actually be, you know, disastrous. I don't know if I believe that or not, but there's a lot of, like, speculation about these types of things. And that, you know, the whole idea is that, like, many people are reincarnating right now in an attempt to solve that crisis before it gets out of hand. I don't know, but one thing I do know is that there is a large-scale effort to get this information out there, and sadly, I think there's a lot of work left to be done. What I'm not seeing are many demographics of people my age who are into this. Like, I just turned 30 a few months ago, so I guess I'm actually on a younger spectrum here. Like, a lot of the people who are into this, like, average 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, but I'm not seeing many people in, you know, 15, 20, 30 who are, you know, that passionate about this. And I think
they're into their games.
One of the reasons for that is you have the skeptic materialist narrative that controls Wikipedia. Yeah. It controls a lot of mainstream media. And they basically say, well, there's nothing to see here. You know, it's already been explained. We already have Bill Nye explained it. Michael Shermer explained it. So it's, you know, we don't, there's nothing to see. Just keep moving along. And most young people just disagree with that, and they don't pay any attention to it until they get older, and they begin experiencing death, and family members begin dying, and then they look back on it, and they take it very seriously at this point. Then they look at the evidence, and then they, you know, are able to be convinced. But, you know, I don't see a whole lot of passion about it, you know, until that happens. And that's something that needs to be worked on. Like, more young people need to begin thinking about these topics. And I think it's very, very important that we do so.
I agree with you 100%. Well, Cyrus, we've come to the end of our show, pretty much. That was, like, the fastest hour that I've ever experienced in my life, I think. I think you brought me into some kind of time warp. So,
it wasn't intentional. If I can bring people to time warps, maybe I'll do that next time I'm at my day job, and I can just time warp myself to the end of the day.
There you go. So Cyrus is he's the author of Understanding Life After Death. If you haven't got the book, get it. It's amazing. You will love it. And can't wait for your next book. And just let people know how they can get a hold of you, Cyrus.
I'd say join my group on Facebook. It's called Afterlife Topics. And so I'm always posting stuff. It's getting pretty big. Sometimes there's some drama on there, but sometimes there's a lot of cool discussions. And I usually post my thoughts and ideas, and you can connect with me on Facebook that way. I have a website called Afterlife Topics. It's a little bit Spartan at the moment, but there's a lot of new material, new articles coming up on that website. And if you're, for some bizarre reason, you're not interested in the afterlife so much, then you can go to my main website, which is CyrusKirkpatrick.com, which is more focused on my other books and my travels and some of my social critiques, which is kind of a different genre that I'm in, but in some ways it's also connected because I always keep a spiritual message in all the things I do, so there's a small connection.
Wonderful. Well, Cyrus, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure I'm going to be connected with you. Keep that connection going on Messenger and Facebook, and I'm a big fan of your work, and just keep it up.
Thank you, Roman. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll be around. Easy to contact. I'm online way too much, so I'm usually there.
All right. Okay, well, thank you again, and from the Forever Family Foundation, we want to say goodnight to everybody, and keep listening. It's a wonderful show, and from myself, from Bob and Fran Ginsberg, who are in absentia right now, we wish you a very good night, and we'll see that, science is going to prove that the afterlife exists. Keep it going. Thank you very much, everybody.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.